WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the Merrily Crab Cake Tour this week. We're going to be out at Pappas in Cockeysville. Come on out. Say hello. We got some great, great guests. Dan Roderick's going to be joining us from the Baltimore Sun. Also going to be joined by David Steele, who's written another book on football as well as race. And we'll be talking a lot about that at Pappas. And then, of course, our final guest is going to be the great Mike Bordick joining us with Frank Kolarik talking about their amazing charity in Field of Dreams as well. And we'll be talking about all of that on Friday with some Maryland Lottery tickets, courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. We're giving away some Raven Scratch. Also had a $50 winner 2 weeks ago. Also our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. And don't forget, if you're involved in Goodwill, you want to do something great for the holidays, next Wednesday we will be serving turkeys and stuffing and cranberry and all the good stuff on Wednesday morning downtown at the Convention Center to a lot of unfortunate folks. You want to come and give for the season of giving. Help our friends out at Goodwill. Throw me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com. And a big thanks to Wise Markets for helping us out with those turkeys next week as well. This guy's not a turkey. He's the opposite of a turkey. He's on the down low right now. He only comes on radio shows and podcasts for people that he's known for decades. So we welcome back future Hall of Famer. It's always fun to say that, even though he'll shake his head at that at this point. He's out of the game and off the ice, as they say. And I haven't had this guy on since before he won the Stanley Cup. We get together once and again and sneak in a Cuban meal on Long Island from time to time. We welcome in my lifelong friend, former head coach. Let's see. Let's go through the numbers now. Islanders, Capitals, Nashville Predators, and, of course, at one point, the Portland Pirates. We welcome in the great Barry Trotz back on to, where are you? Where are you hiding out? You're grown. Are you witness protection hiding from all these?
I am a little bit. I'm hiding out in D.C. in Arlington in my house. My daughter lives with her granddaughter, second birthday. So grandparents came in and we had a real good birthday yesterday. So all good. Hey, you forgot the Baltimore skipjacks of all things.
Oh, I did forget the skipjacks. I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm glad you reminded me of that.
That's legendary. I got to find a lot of memorabilia this summer going through my parents. My dad has moved into an apartment. My mom passed away in January. And also my wife's mother's house, she's gone into assisted living. So I've had to go through a lot of old boxes and stuff, and I found a lot of old Baltimore skipjack memorabilia. Steve Malte and Tim Taylor and all those guys that I ever had the pleasure of coaching at one time or another. So real fun times. It was good memories.
I have my Predators jerseys, the mustard one. I have the white one. I have the blue one from your era. I have the Steve Seftel. I gave Steve his jersey back. I mailed it to him. I asked for his home address about a year and a half ago, and I stuffed it in a box and mailed it off to him. And he didn't know. He went out to the box, and there's his Skipjacks jersey from his road jersey from 1989 that I gave to him. So it filled me up. But what's filling your days, man? Like, I've been thrown out of football. You and I have discussed that online and offline. It is really weird for me to be sitting here watching football on television. I can only imagine the hockey brain that you have, and you've never had a minute outside the game, been employed, gainfully employed all these years. What's it feel like to be old and watching games on TV here at this point, Ross?
It is really different. I will tell you this. I didn't have the whole summer was so consuming with us moving out of Long Island back to Nashville, unpacking, getting my daughter's business underway, helping her there, getting my dad sort of basically 60, 70 years of stuff in his garage and in his house and getting him moved. And so those are really consuming. That was a complete day, 7 days a week. And then we just came back from Winnipeg. Finally getting my wife's mother's house emptied and putting it up for sale for her and getting her into a assisted living. So really hockey wasn't on my brain a lot during the summer. It was just too busy and all that. But once I didn't miss training camp, but once the season started, the bells were going off. it was like, you should be doing this. But the strangest thing that happened, I happened to be in Nashville. David Poyle asked me to come back for his 3,000th game, which that'll be a record that'll never be broken again. So I went back to Bridgestone and just walking into the rink during a regular season game, seeing old friends, the security guards, all that. But being in the suite watching the Philadelphia Flyers and the Nashville Predators play, it was the weirdest thing I've ever felt.
You haven't watched a lot of hockey games in the stands. Is that what you're telling me, like ever?
Basically, yeah. And not being employed by a team at that time. That point.
Well, you've never been a broadcaster. You know, you've never shown up at the rink as anything other than like the coach, literally for the last 30 years, right?
The funniest thing, Nestor, is I rarely go up into the concourse or, you know, I go directly to the dressing room, go to the office, all that.
You only see the game from the ice, right? Like literally your perspective.
I only see the game from the ice and I only generally go in the areas underneath in the event bowl. And I walked into the Bridgestone Arena and I was lost. I really was. I was asking where I should go. And I spent 17 years there and still. It was really a little bit surreal. But at the same time, I know it was, it's going to do me a world of good. I've got so much off my plate that would have been put on either my wife or my sister. And they just, I'm pretty blessed not to be working and be able to do what I need to do, maybe as a good son and a good son-in-law and a good dad for my daughter. So getting all that is really, going to help me get refreshed. Refocused, and I watch games at night. I've been following on Twitter and all the other social media platforms that I always follow when I'm coaching, and so I'm on top of the game. I start watching games, and first I'm looking at how a team's playing, and I'm starting to look at systematic stuff. Triggers that are the certain teams doing the same things. Certain teams have changed coaches. Are they doing the same things? I look at, say, for instance, in Vegas, Bruce Cassidy. Is he doing the same thing he did in Boston, in Vegas? Are they playing the same way? For the most part, yes, you see the subtle changes. The game keeps always evolving. So I'm on top of all that, all the transaction, who's playing well, who's not. And what it's really allowed me to do, I've known the Eastern Conference very well. Been there for the last 9 or 10 years. I'm seeing a little more of the West now, so I'm getting to know that side of the NHL a lot better.
Hey, it's weird even talking to you like this because I'm trying to vibe out. Like, people ask me, is Trotz going to coach again or whatever? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if you know. I don't know if you know what it's like to be unemployed and to sit around and watch it from the outside or whether that would be gratifying for you, right? Like, do you know what you're going to do next?
No, I think, that's a question that everybody's asked me. And I said, I really haven't put a lot of thought on it. Do I think about it? Yeah. But I've never been in this position before. So just like anything else, you got to feel got to get a little bit of a rhythm of what it would be like. I was asked on another podcast, are you going to get back coaching? And it created a little bit of a storm in Toronto, and they weren't going really well, and I answered a commitment to that I made like about a month ago to a certain show, and everybody keeps reading into all that.
Was it something about the original six or something like that? Was that the quote?
I was asked, you've done a lot in the game. Is there anything that you'd like to do? And I just came up in my brain, I'd be cool to do an original six, and that just created a great storm of. It was Toronto and they weren't going really well.
Means something to real hockey fans. When you say the original six, people in my audience are like, I don't even know what that means. Something to you that you said something about it, though, right?
Yeah. I always think those franchises have great history. So, I've done expansion. I've done some reboots for certain teams, and they just asked me and I just said that. So it created a little bit of a storm, but, for me, I was asked, do you know what you want to do? And I said, I think there's two two things I know that I'm very qualified to do. A, as coach, and B, if I went through a, you know, to a management position with a team, I think I'm pretty qualified. I had the great opportunity to, you know, starting in Baltimore and then going up to Portland and all the responsibilities I had. I scouted, I've coached in the minors. I've been a head coach in the minors, been sort of director of player personnel in the minors, then the head coach in the National Hockey League with an expansion team. And David is, you know, was the, allowed us to do a lot of different things, the hiring and all that. So, there's a lot of things I've learned from, you know, people such as Brian McClellan and you know, Lou Lamoriello and David Poile. So I have lots of tools there. So I think whatever direction I go in, I think I have the tools to, you know, be fairly successful at it. So that's all. Do I know what I want to do yet? I'm not at that point. I'm just finishing up all the stuff that I said I wanted to do. Do I have the passion to coach? Yes. Do I have a passion to go into management? I don't know yet because I've never done that, you know, when asked. So just trying to be as transparent as I can. You want to know about my life? I can tell you everything about moving and sorting family items for a couple of families and that transition. So there's parts of it I really enjoy, you know, and there's parts that I sleep a lot better after a loss, you know, when you lose, people don't get this. I always used to, when I was in Nashville, I'd go to church on Sunday and sometimes I wouldn't. Sort of summer break baseball or spring baseball with the church softball team in Nashville. And they used to give me, you know, some flack for, you know, hey, you guys lost last night. You're not going to show up at church. It's a little running joke. Well, they didn't understand. If you lose, you're probably up till 4 or 5 in the morning trying to figure it out or can't get to sleep. If you win, you probably got your hour and a half of work that you need to do. You go to bed pretty soundly because you won and you're able to make it to church the next morning. So I do know that the wins and losses, the late nights, all that, I don't mind that. It's pretty consuming being a coach in any sport.
Well, having time at this point in your life, and I would even speak to Barry Trotz is our guest here, former head coach of the Washington Capitals and the Baltimore Skipjacks. By the way, if you got any of that Skipjack stuff, just send it up here. I'll put it on the walls. You know, if you got some left, I'm the guy that would value old Baltimore Skipjack stuff.
Oh yeah,
more than anybody else.
When I start going through, I have a lot of Baltimore stuff. I'll probably send you an old sweatsuit or two if you want.
Oh, well, wouldn't that look good in that? I probably would fit too, right? I
mean, it probably would fit. It would probably fit. It was a little smaller back then. And then, you know, it'd probably be, have a little that crinkly material we all always had, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff that didn't breathe right.
It didn't breathe right. Pair of Zuba pants.
Oh man, some Zubaz Skipjacks gear from 89. I'd be all about that. You know, you look relaxed, right? You look like out of the game a little bit, but there's a point where like broadcasting or being involved or talking about the game, it feels to me like after not talking to you, you're watching a lot of hockey. I mean, it feels like you're not done all of a sudden. If people are asking me, I'll be like, hey, I talked to Trotz this morning. It doesn't feel like he's done. It feels like you still have unfinished business, despite the fact that I'm calling you a Hall of Fame coach because so many others have called you that. What do you got left to prove other than maybe having a good time? Because this is transactional, right? When Leon just calls you, it was an assignment that clearly he put an end to before you wanted to. New York, it was an assignment. You go there. Nashville was more of like a way of life for you. That kind of job's not going to happen again. This is going to be we're calling you from original city 6X. Will you coach our team for 3, 4, 5 years? Here's millions of dollars. That's a different kind of commitment than maybe you were even used to when you took these last two gigs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I went to Nashville with my expansion team, I was just trying to make it through the first year. And then lo and behold, I made, you know, I'm there 17 years and became, I would say, a little bit of fabric of the community over the 17 years. And
not a little bit, more so than anybody maybe in the history of your sport. Like I don't know anybody that's identified because most coaches don't last long enough. I mean, I can go through all your contemporaries, Tortorella, all these guys. You don't even know where they're coaching anymore because your sport, more than most other sports, has been very transactional for coaches.
Yeah, it has. I think the parity in the NHL has really put a premium on, you know, results. And the coach is the first to go. It's hard to make transactions, I think, just because of salary cap and the way the you know, it's structured now, that, you know, the coaches are the first to go. And usually they are in most sports, but in hockey seems to be more so than some of the other sports right now. So I think there's 11 coaches changed last year or something like that, 9 or 11, I can't remember.
It's a third of the league, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a third of the league. So from that standpoint, I think there's just more pressure. There's expectations, you know, especially some of the Canadian markets, you know, the Vancouver's, the Toronto's. I mean, basically, if you think about it, if you look back, when I made my promise to be on that one show in Toronto, that was a commitment I made like a month ago. Well, they were like 6 games into the season and they're already looking for a coaching change. And I'm like, that's ludicrous. You know, you think about it, in our sport, in the hockey, and sometimes the ownership or management and the fan bases are so impatient. I always look at it as, you know, first 10 games tells you if you got your team out of summer mode. The next 15 games really tells you what kind of team you're probably going to have for the rest of the year. Sometimes, you know, you remove one player or add a player and it changes the whole dynamics in your, for your team. But, Lindy Ruff was so unfair, you know, start the season in New Jersey. It was opening night. They're announcing, the players and all that. They announced Lindy. And he's getting booed, you know, fire Lindy. And they haven't even started the season. That's ludicrous. But I saw the Devils fans, now that the jersey's on top of the league and number one, I think, or pretty close to it. Yeah, they were apologizing, chanting, sorry, Lindy. Well, you know, that's the crazy thing about our sport is, you know, sometimes you need time. You need time to get things together. And these teams that have these long breaks, and I was a part of that last year. Anytime you have those long breaks, you lose a little bit of edge. You turn back. I call it, again, get back into summer mode because you're not in compete mode. Then you need a few games to get back in compete mode. By that time, a lot of times you're in a three game losing streak, and you know things are getting hot again. So. Scheduling and timing and all that is not in your control, but it does play a big factor into, you know, you watch all these teams, how they're going good one week and next week they're not going so good. It's a demanding sport.
What do you miss the most? As you're sitting here watching television, because it is so hard what you guys, I mean, we talk about football. Ravens are on a bye week this week. They haven't played one game in 23 days. They're playing, and football's brutal game. You know that. But you guys are out doing 3-4 days a week, back-to-back games on the road, airports, ice time, finding the ice on the road, hotel to the bus, injuries, get on the bike, back on a plane. It never ends. This, after 40 years of you doing it, this little bit of time, what do you miss?
I miss the locker room, and I miss game day. I love game day. I just do. It's the compete. It's getting a result. I think, the difference between, say, coaches and, say, someone in business is that you get a result, you know, every 48 hours, good or bad, and it's an adrenaline rush or it's an adrenaline crash. And I miss that part. The game day, ready to compete. Let's win behind the bench. Let's find a way. The emotion, all that that goes into it. The strategy, all that. I love game day, but you miss the locker room. You miss the guys. All that. And every player who ever plays, if you ask them, they'll probably say, you know, what do you miss? I miss the guys. I miss the team, what they're talking about. So they miss that, the locker room, the emotion, the friendship, the fellowship, all that. And I do too. I like to see young men have success, and some old men have, as coaches, have success. But that's what I miss the most. You know, the you know, getting in at 2 a.m. or, you know, after a game, the typical thing is that your game day, you're starting at 7, probably at 7:30, meeting with the coaches, getting your, you know, the prep for your opponent. You have your pregame skate. You know, you do your press. You go, you have a bite to eat. You may, if you get lucky, you may have a quick half hour nap. And get changed, go to the rink, get your stuff ready for the players, your presentations. You know, they get there, their warm up, you go through the game, win or lose. Then after the game, you know, you get home and you have an hour and a half work because you're starting again. You want to come, you know, put whatever happened in that game. You want all the analytics, you want all the stuff, all your you know, your film, all that put in place and analyzed so that you're ready to go at 7:30 a.m. next day. And people don't get that part, that you may only have had 3 or 4 hours of sleep and you're back at it the next day, getting ready for the players that come in at, you know, 10 o'clock or whatever. So you're there putting in a lot of hours. Those game days are usually end up being pretty close to 16 to 18 hour days, most days, but I love those. I really do.
I'd say we need 82 more of those for you, Coach. Barry Trotz is here. He is there just hanging out in D.C., hanging out in Nashville, going back to Canada, making rumors on Canadian hockey radio and all that. I have not had you on, and we've been together a couple of times since you left Washington after the parade. I remember I shared that picture with you where you're looking in one direction and everybody in the franchise is looking the other direction at the parade. I've not had you on at all. You did all these. You did a plague. We did bubble hockey. We did indoor, outdoor. We did all of that stuff. Yes. Let's talk about D.C. a little bit, and not necessarily just your exit, but what it opened for you. But what do you think about when you think about that? Because it really feels to me, as a fan, I feel cheated. As a longtime person, I feel cheated that you didn't get a chance to come back and be a part of it. I know you moved on, made a lot of money, went to New York, tried to win another cup, did pretty well in New York 1 year, as I remember, as well. You were on the pathway there during the bubble year. But the D.C. thing, for anybody in my audience, my friends, Ed Frankovic doesn't even know I'm talking to you today. But when they hear it, they think, oh, Trotz, he got screwed. Like, that's what people say to me.
Yeah.
Where are you on it 4 years later, now that New York's come and gone? You haven't talked a whole lot about it, certainly not locally, but I feel a little cheated about it. And it does feel weird to me that if you were invited back for a 5-year, a 10-year, whatever that would be, man, there's some real awkwardness about your situation that not a lot of other coaches would have that kind of awkwardness.
Yeah, there might be, but not for me. I really don't hold any grudges. I moved on. There was something in place. There was a verbal agreement that we had, and I felt it wasn't being honored, if you will. And so I just moved on. I walked away from a contract. I just did. And so
you didn't feel like it was fair, right? Like, literally, that's it, right?
Yeah. And so I just walked away, and I basically, you know, I could have came back. That wasn't their choice. That was my choice. I just felt that I'd go in a different direction. I was heading out to British Columbia to do what I'm doing right now, I guess. So I was out of work only for a day. I handed in my resignation and moved on, and had a few teams calling me. So most
did you make the right choice in retrospect that you look back?
Yeah, I did. It was more principle for me. It was done on principle, nothing on spite or anything like that. It was just principle. And I don't have any grudges. I saw Ted and a lot of the the management very quickly after I'd left. I had gone to a Mystics game. And a lot of the management was there, so I'm fine, totally fine. If there's any if it's uncomfortable, it'll be uncomfortable on the other side, not mine. I don't.
When
I don't
you think about it, I mean, the celebration and the enjoyment and Ovi dancing and fountains drunk and like all that, you just sort of like backdoored and went to the. It feels like you didn't get to squeeze a lot of the fun out of it once it was all over with, to some degree.
Well, I think, you know, you missed the banner raising and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, but you know, it was fun. The run was fun, and the night in Vegas and coming back.
Oh, that was a night. Thank you for that, by the way. That was the last hockey game I went to. I've told you that. I haven't watched a hockey game. I literally have not watched a period of a hockey game since that night in Vegas. Because once I walked out of there and you were getting canned and I was getting treated the way I was like, maybe it's time. You know, maybe after 50 years of watching hockey, maybe I just need to walk away. And the last thing I remember was the elevator door shutting at the Mandarin Orient with you and I, and you looking at me like, we're going to Bellagio to roll dice. You coming? That's the end of my hockey life, Trotz.
It was fun. It was fun. The guys, I still keep in contact with Ovi and a few of the players. And I guarantee you, if I'm invited to a 10 or 20 year reunion and I'm available, if they send me an invitation, I am definitely going. There's not a question. There's too many good people. There's too many good memories, memories with the players, the management, the security people. All that there, I have no ill will towards anyone, or anything. One thing I've learned in my life, don't be bitter. Hey, whatever you focus on is what you feel. And if I felt, betrayed or whatever, I'll be bitter and I don't need that. It's worked out fine for me. I mean, I went to the island. It was a great challenge. We're trying to get that building built in Belmont and, John Tavares left, so their star player left and looked like they were going to be a floundering franchise. But that year, we not only made the playoffs, we had 102 points. We won our first round, knocked off Pittsburgh again for the second straight year with a different team. And then, we had a good run, and that sort of established a really good culture. And then we had the next 2 years, if the Tampa Bay Lightning are not meeting us in the conference final, I may have two more Stanley Cup rings, because I felt very confident if we got by Tampa Bay that we were going to win a Stanley Cup. We didn't. We lost in six, and then we lost in seven both times, and they went on to win cups. Very similar to my first couple of years in Washington, where we in fact couldn't get by Pittsburgh, and once we did, we won a cup. So I think we built a real good culture in Washington. To this day, there's some good cultural things that are still there, and I think we did the same thing with the island. And last year was, I call, a bizarre year for us in terms of the schedule, the COVID, all that, but. No ill will to Washington, and same with Lou. I talk to Lou, probably every 2 weeks. Good contacts there, so it's business. I get it. It's business, and in sport, no matter what you say, it's not personal. It's just business.
Barry Trotz is here. It's always personal with he and I, almost never business. At some point, it might be. So when people ask me now, hey, what's Trotz doing? I'm like, he's waiting for an assignment, is the way I feel at this point. You think you're going to coach again, or you do not want to say that? Or it sounds to me like you're far more engaged than some other. I know a lot of old guys like you that used to coach and made money and maybe going to Hall of Fame. I have football coaches that literally haven't watched a game in three. Like, once they're gone, they go to a mountain and They don't watch Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, baseball the same. And baseball is even worse because you play so much for so long, you know, 200 games a year, like all of that, that once it's over, sometimes it's over. It doesn't feel over for you, dude. And you love the game so much.
I think, you know, the game has given me so much, and I still have the passion. I call it a little bit of an addiction with the game. But I think, it's just like anything else. I think I always want to, I don't know what my next step is. I'm sort of, once I get all this stuff that I need to do for my family, then I'll focus on myself. But at the same time, I still believe that if, you know, there's, you know, options, I can get back coaching. I can, maybe hopefully jump on with in a management position with a team, or I can retire. And those are really the three options, and they're pretty good options. So,
well, you're retired right now, so you got a chance to like smell it a little bit. And that's sort of the weird part for me is I haven't talked to you in 6 months. Last time I talked to you, you were coaching the Islanders, trying to figure that out. And I'm like, you smell refreshed to me. You seem, chipper right now.
Yeah, I've got lots of, I'm chipper. I'm chipper, no question. So I guess just like anything, I'm always one, and you know me, I'm always detailed, very prepared. So until I decide which way I'm going to go, I'm going to stay on top of those other areas, no question. And if I retire, I'm not going to be one of those guys that never watches a hockey game again. I won't be. That's just, I get too much passion for the game. Love the game so much. But I will take on some, I do have some bucket list things that I do want to, go to, see a premier game in London, in soccer, which, who would ever thought that.
You let me know when you want to go over. We'll go over, make sure we'll see Royal Albert Hall while we're over there too. We'll do it upright.
All right. But
I felt all left out missing the Tom Brady game in Munich. You know, the guy that saved Jan's life, we sent him to the game in Munich on Sunday. And, man, they're singing Take Me Home Country Roads and stuff. And I'm thinking, I screwed this up. I should have gone there, I was in Toronto a couple of weeks ago seeing Bono up at the Meridian Hall there. And I caught all the hockey buzz up there. And I gave a lifeline to Dougie McClain while I was up there as well. Yeah. I mean, hockey will suck you in when you're in that environment. It makes you and for you to want to watch it and say that you still want to be a part of it, you still envision yourself in there, that would be my tell when you're watching it from the outside and you're like, I'm glad I'm not at the rink tonight. You don't have that vibe about you.
No, I don't. But I do see the root, some of the stuff that's happened in our game, some of the markets. One thing that I can say, when I'm coaching, I don't follow what people say about me or social media or anything like that. So I'm a little bit more numb to that. You have to be if you want to be successful. Now that I'm not involved, I found that you're seeing a little bit more of that. That makes sense.
You see the drama.
You see the more of the drama, exactly. And I thought, that what a sick business sometimes, the emotion that comes out. I shouldn't say a sick business. That's incorrect. We have such a passion for our business that it just emotionally it just drives people off the deep end.
Somebody loses every night.
Yeah, someone's got to lose. Yeah, and there's teams that win and beat it. There's not much. People don't realize there's not much difference between best team and the worst team. I said to someone one time, the difference between winning the President's Trophy, which is the most wins, the most points. That's given to the team at the end of the regular season, the difference between that and the 16th place team in the league is one win a month. That's it. One win a month.
Well, and then it's one win over the week when you have to play that team in the first round of the playoffs that you got to be one win better that week, right? Literally, yeah, those 10 days.
Yeah, and people don't realize that the league's so close. But I sort of laugh, teams that are, a team that's considered a really good team beats a lesser team, if you will, but they didn't beat them by enough. All I know is that just if you got one more than them, you win. That's all you need. And, you know, some of the star players on franchises, they carry a lot of weight. They have to go 82 games, and it is hard. You don't know, you know, people don't know a player gets banged up. They've got the same schedule. They get the hard matchups. There's guys that get slashed and hacked, and they get pushed into the boards, and the shoulder's hurting, the wrist is hurting. You might have a swollen knee. You're still playing, but you might not be quite as effective. The difference in say, football, for instance, and hockey is you have usually 5 or 6 days for their body to heal. In hockey, you have usually 24 hours. So a player gets nicked up, and it just compounds. It really never settles down until you sort of get a break.
Well, I remember those upper and lower body injuries and the extremities coming down and covering your game. So I hope to cover the next time you coach, if there is such a thing, that I'll be there waving the banner for you. And you send me a new hat and a new shirt. I'm independent now. I mean, the football team's trying to get rid of me here. So my wife's rooting for the Bills all of a sudden. So I'm going to need a new hockey team. I'm going to assume that whenever you take a job, that will become my new team. Or if you take a job. If not, I'll just, you know, walk the earth. And I walked past the Hockey Hall of Fame last week in Toronto, and I thought, I love hockey. I still love hockey. I just don't have an affiliation above and beyond you at this point. So
we'll get you one. If not, we'll pick one, and we'll work it together. So
how would I look in blue and white? I'm just saying. Coach, take care of yourself. I don't want to start any rumors here in between two countries, but I am glad you're taking some time off. To some degree, if somebody calls on December the 19th and says, we need to hire Trotz because they're going to be firing coaches, the firing season's here. Taking a job in the middle of the season, is that something that would be really weird for you, right? That's something you've never done, right?
Never done that. No, I haven't done that. It would be weird. It would probably depend on where the team is in terms of their prospects being, are they, you know, a contender or not? Are they a team? To me, at this point, it's the people that you would be working with. You know, that is so important in terms of culturally being on the same plane.
Every guy your age tells me that. Brian Billick, with my partner here, would say the reason he never went back to work is he never found the right humans around him. He had opportunities and thought, I can't win there. I won't be happy there. I don't want to live there. I'm not going to make a life there after 3, 4, 5 years if I can't win in that window. For whatever reason, you believed with the Islanders that even without Tavares, that you could win there, you know? So you believed in a situation not a lot of people believed in.
Yeah, no, I did. I thought, you know, I didn't know Lou Lamoriello at all, to be honest with you. All the years in the game. I was in the West. He was in the East. You'd have a very cordial conversation with Lou, you know, when you'd see him at the draft or something like that. So really, I knew he was an acquaintance, but not someone I knew. But I knew, I talked to a lot of people. Everybody who's worked for him, you know, loves him in terms of how he treats you. No matter, you know, all the things, and it was true. He's a guy that whatever he says, he means. And he's got the very strong convictions, which is fantastic. And he sold me on the fact that, you know, they wanted to build something. Can we get that rink built? And the only way to do that is have a competitive team, a team that, you know, got their culture back, got their swagger back. And I thought we were able to accomplish that. Obviously, the first year without Tavares, we went further than they had gone in 20 years. And then when we went to the bubble in the following year, we went to the conference finals both years, which in that 3-year window was the most playoff wins that they had since their glory years of winning 4 straight, you know.
Well, you're no Al Arbor, but you're pretty good.
No one's going to be Al Arbor. I think Al was a genius, way ahead of his time. You know, you look at those guys, and they were way ahead of their time. I'm not ahead of anybody.
Well, still legends. I mean, we lost Bossy this year, and Potvin's selling socks now, and
Yeah. It was a tough year on the island. It really was. We lost so many of those legends, you know, on the island. And then we had a really bizarre year trying to open up that building with COVID and half our team. And you know, the first 9 or 10 home games didn't feel like home games, you know, even though they were our home games, because we'd never practiced there. I think we practiced once there. You know, we were.
It's got that big lower bowl. So the folks that built that building, Oakview, and they're doing the Baltimore Arena, and they're bringing Springsteen in here in a couple of months. So our arena, the former Civic Center, First Mariner Arena, and Royal Farms Arena, has been rebranded as CFG Bank Arena, but they've redone the entire bowl. I've only gotten the videos of it. There's a lot of dust down there now, but the new buildings are built with these giant lower bowls, mainly for Billy Joel concerts and John Mayer concerts to sell more tickets. But they are unique buildings. They're different than the old buildings.
They are. In the island, they really thought it out well. You've got the fans that sort of old school look where they're on top of you. And they got one end that is I'm going to say English soccer style, where there's no seats. You stand, and they can wave and the flags and that, and they got all the bars. And they even have a beer hall that has a band every night in there. So it's a fun thing. And
you know, I like beer and music, right? You're sucking me in here.
Yes, you do. So they'll do a fantastic job. The people that are building that built, they thought of everything, and that's great. That, you know, and I know that the old building that we used to play in, that needs a revamp, and it'll be great for the city. It really will. I just,
you're saying that in 1988, you're like, man, when are they going to fix this place? You know?
Yeah, exactly. But it will really energize the city. You see it around and I saw it in Nashville. They built that the building right downtown, and everything grows around that building. So if you can make that building exceptional, which they will, I will guarantee you that downtown Baltimore will continue to grow and grow, and it'll be a hub, because you got a great inner harbor, you got both the stadiums there, and they got you.
Oh, you. Only part-time, though. But if they bring Springsteen in, bring Blink 182 in here, I'll be down for some concerts, so it'll be a good time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Chauncey, I love you. I appreciate you. I miss you. It's great to have you on. It's been 4 years since I've had you on the show. I just took a flyer, and I'm like, wonder where Trotz is. I was in Canada watching hockey last week, so it's always good to visit with you. Stay safe, stay healthy, find yourself in the transactions, you know. Don't let me read on Twitter that you took some job, you know. So, yeah, send no me problem. A note, at least let me know a little bit, all right?
Hey, where I'll send you some stuff when I start going through it. I'll send me text me your address, and I'll send a box of good stuff, old memories.
You Baltimore skipjacks, when you skipjacks. From Barry Trotz is here, future Hall of Famer, former head coach of your Washington Capitals, the Stanley Cup champion Capitals, as well as my former Nashville Predators, and their. I never caught on to the island, but I was rooting for you, but I had some weird stuff from back in the 80s that, you know, I mean, that's how it was there. But well, when you take over the next assignment, I'll be all in. Head coach Barry Trotz, taking care of his family, taking care of business, watching some hockey, and looking at the phone, waiting for the phone to ring. I'm making that up. But take care of yourself. It's good to see you. You look so happy and healthy, Trotzy.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm going to have to get on my daily program here. Been a lot of traveling, so I'll shape up.
Look, the game's already cost you all your hair. You have no hair left to lose. You might as well go back and coach at this point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Barry Trotz, head coach of the Baltimore Skipjacks at one point, hanging out here. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday. We're going to be at Pappas in Cockeysville. I'm giving away Maryland scratch-off lottery tickets from the Ravens. We had a $50 winner 2 weeks ago. Come on out, get a scratch-off. Come on out, say hello to Mike Bordick, Dan Rodericks, as well as David Steele and Frank Kolarik, all talking about baseball, let's see, musicals, and race and sports writing, and probably a little Ravens in there as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.